Welcome to Rise to the Top, a podcast from the Greater Houston Partnership that aims to amplify the voices of accomplished female leaders in the Houston region. In each episode, we'll feature compelling guests who will share their personal journey and discuss how their organization's making an impact right here in Houston. I'm your host, Amy Cronus, Chair of the Partnership and Managing Partner for Deloitte Houston. In this episode of Rise to the Top, we're talking with Ann Stern, President and CEO of Houston Endowment. Today, we're going to discuss the mission of the foundation, how it's preparing for Houston's future, and more. We're going to also talk to Ann about her personal journey and what advice she has for other female professionals. We're honored to have her here with us today. Ann, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Amy. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Ann, let's get started. You have had an amazing career here in Houston and a somewhat unique career path. Let's start for our listeners with a brief overview of your career and personal journey. You're a wife, mother, attorney, you've been a leader in healthcare administration, and now serving as president and CEO of Houston Endowment. So talk about that trajectory, if you will.
Well, early in my career, I got some great advice. Make a plan, but don't hold onto it too tightly. And that advice has served me really well. I started out on a very traditional law firm path. And then when our children were young, I made the decision after a lot of thought, consultation, obviously, with my husband, to scale back from that work temporarily. And that was really hard. You know, at the time, I was concerned that that was going to limit my career options forever. And instead, it had the opposite effect. It really opened the door to opportunities that I never would have imagined. So not only did I have the gift of that time with my children when they really needed me, but I also had time to join the boards of several nonprofit organizations, including Texas Children's. After 6 years on the board of Texas Children's, I was sort of unexpectedly recruited to join the management team as general counsel. And over time, I got more involved in the business side. Ultimately, I moved into an executive vice president role with responsibility for the inpatient clinical operations and the development of some really exciting new strategies, the Pavilion for Women and the Neurological Research Institute. So overall, I really credit Texas Children's with giving me those experiences of managing a diverse team in a complex P&L, developing and executing innovative strategies, and also ensuring that alignment between management and the board during a period of very rapid change, both in the industry and in the organization. And all of that positioned me to lead Houston Endowment.
Wow. Great advice. Have a plan, but be flexible. And clearly you've been very flexible. And it's just great for other women to hear how many different chapters that you've had that have led you here to Houston Endowment. So let's talk about that for a minute. I think for a lot of Houstonians, it's an organization they've heard of. They may not be completely familiar with what it does. Can you break it down for us?
Yeah. Private foundations, I think, are often a bit mysterious, and there is no one size fits all for how they're for their purpose or for how they're run. But Houston Endowment is a private foundation that was founded 84 years ago by Jesse and Mary Gibbs Jones. And they founded it to exist in perpetuity. They wanted to improve the lives of Houstonians so that their adopted city, Houston, would flourish. And that was really the purpose. The endowment's assets have grown substantially since then. Today, we have about $2.5 billion. And our job is to invest those assets so that they continue to grow. And as a private foundation, fulfill the IRS requirements that we spend 5% a year, at least, of the value of our assets in charitable spending. So over the years, we have adapted and changed to meet the needs of Greater Houston. That was part of the Joneses' original design. They understood that they could not begin to anticipate the city's future challenges. And I think they'd be blown away by the Houston of today, this dynamic, world-class city. But I think they'd also care deeply about the barriers to opportunity that exist for so many people in our region. You know, there are lots of people who are not thriving here. COVID has laid that bare, and COVID has exacerbating a lot of the existing inequities, amplifying them. So at Houston Endowment, we're committed to creating equity of opportunity and to enhancing the vibrancy of the region. We have two long-term priorities, pre-K-12 public education and civic engagement. Why these two? Well, education's the single biggest determinant of an individual's ability to find employment and thrive. communities are strongest when people are informed and engaged in the decisions that impact their lives and shape the region's future. We also support the arts. We view the arts as absolutely essential to a thriving city. And we appreciate the way that they celebrate our diversity and connect us to each other. And finally, we keep substantial dry powder because we don't know what's coming and we want to be able to respond to emerging community needs or opportunities.
Talk about vision of the Joneses, and we're all the beneficiaries. That's so impressive. Taking philanthropy in our city a little further, do you find that still to be true that we're known as a philanthropic city? And what are some of the challenges of operating an organization like this in Houston?
Well, absolutely. Houston is a strong philanthropic city. There's so many generous individuals and organizations. It's really quite inspiring. And I think that speaks to the heart of the city. Houstonians just come together to get things done. I think back to Hurricane Harvey, when the whole world saw the Houston spirit in action as we helped each other and we rebuilt our community. I think it's that spirit that creates the bridges across the public, the private, the nonprofit, and the philanthropic sectors in Houston. And that is absolutely essential to solving today's challenges. You know, if you think about our approach, the barriers that I mentioned earlier, those barriers that are creating inequities of opportunity, they're often structural and systemic. They're deeply embedded in the education system, the housing system, the healthcare system, you name it. And we have to change those structures and systems to truly solve these problems and to create lasting change. You cannot do that by yourself. And so almost none of our grants are standalone grants, and almost none of our work is done by Houston Endowment working alone. It's done with others that are part of the ecosystem of this very strong philanthropic city.
All terrific. The focus of the foundation, as you mentioned, largely centers around enhancing education and civic vibrancy and advancing equity of opportunity. What do you see among the leading opportunities for our community in this arena? What projects are you most excited about that our listeners should know about?
Well, Houston has a lot of assets. I mean, a strong economy, diverse and growing population, world-class cultural and civic assets. I certainly do not need to tell you about that. but we are focused right now on how do we help ensure that people aren't being left behind. So I'll mention two current projects that I'm really excited about. Last year, we created a $25 million racial equity and justice fund, and it was to be spent out over the next 3 to 4 years. $20 million of that fund has already been deployed to over 40 organizations that are directly addressing anti-Black racism and injustice. They may be education organizations, they may be in the arts, they may be criminal environmental justice organizations, grassroots community organizations, but all of them received virtually unrestricted dollars. We just wanted those organizations that are doing such great work on the front lines to have a boost to keep doing what they're doing so well. And the second one is specific to the arts. In partnership with the Ford Foundation, who provided 5% in matching funds, we're collaborating with other funders in our region to create, it's called BAMF. It's the BIPOC Arts Network and Fund. And that's a $13 million community-led fund that will support and bolster Houston's BIPOC arts organizations. Obviously, COVID hurt all the arts, but it really dealt a blow to those who had been historically underfunded. So we're excited about the opportunity to sort of lift up the voices of these organizations throughout the community and introduce them to new audiences and new donors.
Both of those very exciting opportunities that love to hear about. So, you know, beyond the foundation, Anne, you currently serve and you've previously served on the boards of a number of organizations, including the University of Texas Law School Foundation and Good Reason Houston. What causes are you most personally passionate about?
Well, it's a little bit hard to pick one, but education has always been a top priority for me. My education, like I'm sure so many people, has had such a big influence on my life, probably second only to my family. And it created virtually every opportunity I've had. So serving on the boards of UT Law School Foundation and Good Reason Houston enables me to give back. And I think it's also been a really great opportunity for continued leadership development. I mean, you know, I tell people all the time, if you're not already, I highly, highly recommend that you get involved in a nonprofit organization, not just with your dollars, but with your time and your talent, because not only will you contribute to your nation, to your region's resiliency, but you'll also gain wonderful opportunities to continue to learn and grow as a leader.
That's great. Great to hear what drives you in terms of education. As I mentioned in the introduction, this podcast is largely focused on female leadership. How do you think the challenges that young women are facing today are different than they were, say, 10 or 20 years ago? And what can today's leaders like yourself do to ensure the success of this next generation of aspiring young women?
Well, I have, I certainly can't presume to know exactly what it's like to be a young female leader right now. But I will say that I think COVID and the past 2 years have been unlike any other time in my career and a really difficult time for all leaders. But we've all seen the headlines about the disproportionate impact that COVID continues to have on women in the workforce, including women leaving the workforce in substantial numbers. That's really troubling in terms of the future implications. And so I would offer this advice. Every career is going to go through difficult periods. Every career is going to be disrupted for either personal or professional reasons or both. And so I think sometimes as women, we have a hard time giving ourselves the grace and the space to navigate those disruptions. And I think it's just really important that we support each other through those periods. I think it's critical that we all remember our priorities, set them, hold on to them, keep your eye on the long term, and then again, have a plan, but don't hold on to it so tightly that you miss opportunities.
That's so true. Space and grace, great advice. And you've seen tremendous changes in Houston throughout your career. Look into the crystal ball for us. What do you see for our city's future? And maybe how you see the foundation evolving.
Well, I see us continuing to work on hard things and continuing to rely on our relationships with these other wonderful organizations across the community, Greater Houston Partnership being one of those. But in terms of the crystal ball, I see a future Houston where we recognize that our greatest asset is our people, and we invest in that asset. And it starts with education. In that future in the crystal ball, every child has access to a world-class education and great choices for their future. And challenging? Yes, of course. It's going to take leadership and courage, and it's going to take us all working together. But we can fulfill a vision for an inclusive city. Houston has always been a practical can-do city. We're all exhausted from the past 2 years. I know I am. But the Houston spirit is alive and well.
May it be so. So now let's for a little bit of fun, let's move us into a lightning round here. We want to get to know you and your Houston. So tell us, Anne, what you enjoy most about this great city. Okay. So here's just some quick answers. Just fire away. Favorite restaurant?
Cultivari.
Favorite place to unwind?
Memorial Park. And I am really loving the new Eastern Glades.
They are beautiful. Place you love to take out-of-town guests?
Love to take out-of-town guests to the Cistern at Buffalo Bio. Think it's a magical place.
Very cool. Power lunch hotspot?
Toss up between La Griglia and Pondicherry.
Both wonderful. What makes Houston a great place to live?
The people.
What does Houston need more of?
That's easy. Great public schools. More great public schools.
When you think about Houston's overall trajectory as a city, what word comes to mind?
One word. I think we're like an adolescent, really full of energy and potential, and even now just coming into our own.
Outstanding. You said it all. Anne, I want to thank you again for sharing so much with us today. I hope your story and your perspective helps others.
Thank you for having me, Amy. It's been fun.
And that's it for this episode of Rise to the Top. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And you can do so via your favorite podcasting platform or by visiting the podcast page at houston.org. There you'll also find links to recent news updates and learn how you can get more involved in the work of the partnership to make a difference in the Houston region, just like Anne and the other leaders that we're having the privilege of speaking with. So thanks again for listening to Rise to the Top.